Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, welcome to episode 83 of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Date today, April 26, 2012. Our topic for today is Techno Kids with Paul McGuire from The Affluent Student. Oh, guys, oh, you've got to hang out for the episode today. It is so good. One of my top favorites that we've gone over. Paul McGuire from The Affluent Student. This is his second time to be on the show, and there's a very, very good reason for that. Paul knows his stuff. He's got a good mentality. He's got the right kind of heart and mindset for all of this stuff, and he is passionate about kids and school and the stuff that is in big to kids, and I tell you, I love his site, so you need to run over there to www.affluentstudent.com. Check out his website. Say hi. Drop a line. Let him know that you're looking at his site. Got some great stuff over there. We're going to talk a little bit about Techno Kids. And I've got a long title for it. I'm going to leave it once we move into the interview here in just a minute. I've got Paul hanging on the line. So we're going to move into the actual interview here in just a little bit. And we're going to talk a little bit about where our title comes from. But we're going to go over something that I think almost every single parent that I know of today has some element of issues with this, whether it's small and not a big deal or huge and parents have no idea. And we're going to talk about technology in the kids, hands of kids, excuse me, technology in the hands of kids. We're going to go everything from cell phones to Facebook to Twitter. We're going to go over playing video games. We're going to hit the full spectrum today on technology and kids, and we're going to have some pretty heavy-hitting topics, so you definitely want to check this out today. Before we do that, let's get into a little bit of housekeeping. Guys, consider signing up for my free episode notification email. Now, what that is that's just your way to get into my email notification. Anytime anything new comes out, like this episode, when that comes out, you'll get an email just saying, hey, there's new content over at Family Podcast Network. Come on over and check us out. It's a great way to get notification of what's going on. I post a lot of updates and information, anything that's going on that's out of the ordinary. And anyway, you guys sign up for that because I'd hate for you guys to miss out on information that you're going to be wanting. Also consider signing up and becoming a PTACer. PTAC stands for Parents for the Ethical Treatment of Adolescents and Kids. And that's just a fun way of saying become a member of the site. If you feel like you're getting 20 cents per episode, and I crank these things out completely for free, it'll always be that way. That's my model in this. I'll always offer these podcasts for free. But if you feel like you want to pay back on that, you want to repay back on that and help other people be able to get a hold of these same benefits, consider becoming a PTACer. I've got two different ways that you can do it, either $5 a month or $50 for a year-long setup. And that is what I offer to you guys. Also, second thing for you to choose from, consider also liking me on Facebook or liking and sharing this episode on Facebook. That's one of the best ways that I get my stuff spread around is you guys like it, share it, spread it around to your sites, and then it moves and it goes across Facebook and Twitter, etc. So you guys consider doing that as well. Well, with all of that said, man, I am just, oh man, I'm so fired up. We've got to get into this episode today because I'm so pumped up for what we're going to be doing today. So let's go ahead and head over to the interview with Paul. Paul, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Trey. It's good to talk to you again. How's things out in Texas?
You know, it's actually been really good. It's been cool. And we got our garden in the ground yesterday, which is just totally awesome. And let me tell you, normally in Texas right now, it's uncomfortable being outside, but it was actually quite lovely.
That's good. That's good. It did the same thing here a couple of weeks ago in Alabama. You know, we got up into the high 80s, and it's cooled off in the last week, so it's been a little more pleasant. But I think both where you and I live, it's those days are short lived. This week's getting real hot.
I agree. Well, we were talking during the intro segment too. This is going to be Paul's second appearance on here, and there's a good reason for that. You guys stay tuned for the what we're going to talk about today. Paul is fantastic at what he talks about, and we're going to go over a little bit today. I titled the topic Techno Kids, When Your Kid Knows As Much as a 1980s Princeton Technology Graduate. And this was kind of the title was spawned from an interview I did last week with Bill, and he mentioned, hey, he's a graduate from Princeton in the technology and computer department, and he jokingly mentioned that his kids are doing on the computer by themselves with no formal training what he was trained to do when he graduated from Princeton in 1984. And so we just we joked about that. But there's also an element of seriousness to that, where kids are so technologically plugged in, they're so steeped and all the tech that is out there. And I think, and Paul, tell me what you think, but I think we absolutely need to stay up to date as possible on technology, not so that we're big brothering our children, but so that we're teaching and we're educating. We know, but what are your thoughts?
It's amazing to watch the kids as they, you know, sit down at these computers or sit down with a cell phone or, you know, any kind of technology like that. It's almost as if it's second nature for them. They don't have to, they don't need help. They figure out how to do it. It's intuitive. It's fluid for them, you know, and we're reaching that point. I was in class, I think last month, and we're at the first, you know, we're this year, we're reaching that first generation where the kids that are reaching college age today, the college freshmen that are going to go in, if you think about it, they don't know the life without the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, these kids are the first, you know, the first generation that has been always connected. So it is such a, the way it has an impact on you and me, how we're able to do this today, Trey, is, you know, over the internet and just the things that this technology enables that weren't there 20 years ago, you know, it blows the mind. And especially when, you know, we as adults grew up without it, these kids, though, they know it, they expect it, they can do it. And you just sit and you watch them move around and you're like, how in the world did you figure that out? But they do. And it's just a different thing. It's because they've grown up on it, you know? So, I agree. And they can do things where, you know, the interfaces and the applications that load on these computers and cell phones nowadays, they're so much better than we had back when we first started too. So it makes it easier as well. It's not just, you know, it's not just that they're smart kids and they're intuitive, but, you know, the technology is so much slicker and so much smoother nowadays too. You're right. You look at it and you're like, holy cow, I have no idea how they figured that out. But it's just – they just do. You know, it's how they work nowadays.
You know, I tell you, I really understood this. You know, part of the psychology degree, we have to stay up on what's called continuous education units or CEUs. Sure. And I knew that I fell in love with family stuff years ago, and I knew that one of the major contentions, the fights that families were going to have, was going to be centralized around a lot of these issues. So I really started taking time to go into, this is going to kind of get dreary for a second, but I started really focusing in on understanding sexual abuse awareness, getting trained on that. I started taking a lot of cybercrime trainings and seeing, it's amazing how when we're not involved, those same predators that would steal kids out, you know, from behind your back at a theater will do that now online, coming across as acting like they're 13-year-old boys that want to meet up with 13-year-old little girls. And I came out of those trainings sick to my stomach and just pale. Because these guys are out there and they're real, and we have got to be a part of that. Of that generation where we're understanding those things, because if we're not, we are potentially setting our kids up to be in a dangerous, dangerous place. And so we need to be expert. I go as far to say we don't just need to know about it. We need to be experts in these fields. I would even say if we can become more experts than our kids are, that's the best, because if we don't, there are some bad people out there that will hurt our kiddos. And again, I'm not trying to scare people, but bring in facts. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, I sure do, Trey. We've seen the stories where you go into these folks' house and they pull their computers and they've got, you know, child pornography, and they look at logs of things and activities that they've had going on. And it is, you know, it's just like you said, it turns your stomach. It's disturbing. And you're thinking, oh, my gosh. And how can my kid fall for this? And it's because these kids are looking for somebody to connect with. And when they think they're connecting with a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old on the other end that is willing to befriend them, that's willing to listen to what they have to say, and is not going to judge them and is not going to tell them they can't do something or whatever, man, that really resonates with kids that are looking – they're looking, you know, not only to boost their self-esteem, to have friends or things like that. You know, they're also looking to establish some of their own independence. And if you think that your child is going to, you know, if you're going to just assume that, you know, my kid knows the right thing to do, you know what? just sit and watch the logs on some of these things. Go out and do a little bit of investigation on the internet and see and look at some of these cases, and you read the transcripts yourself and you see if you could tell the difference between the 14-year-old kid and the 41-year-old sexual predator. It's disturbing, and you're right. The parents have to be hypersensitive to it, and I think there's things that parents can do to make sure that their kids are doing things safe online, and I hope we can, you know, talk about that for a few minutes today.
Oh, absolutely. That's going to be one of our primary questions. So now I think we've got most of the audience's attention as to why we're doing this. Again, this is not to scare or to drop bombs. It's about bringing reality and fact into the fact that this is a part of our kids. I think parents that try to take the approach of, well, we're just going to eliminate technology, I think parents can do that. I think it's going to be an uphill battle that is probably never going to get easy because it's so much a part of our culture now with our kids. And so trying to say, well, we're just going to get rid of all of it to try to safeguard them, I don't think that's going to work. And I don't think that's the right approach to take with it either. But it is about education, about teaching kids how do we use these technologies appropriately, even educating kids what to look out for. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. So let's start out with, I think, what the number one thing that families are going to have in their households, that their kids are going to have in their possessions, the number one thing above laptops and all that other good stuff is going to be, guess what? Cell phones. So let's start off with cell phones. What do you think, Paul, is the right age to begin giving a kid a cell phone?
Man, that's such a tough question. And and for, you know, for a number of reasons. Obviously, you've got kids that they're very involved in activities nowadays, sometimes over-involved. That's a whole nother discussion we can have another day. But, you know, when these kids are in these activities and they're doing things after school and, you know, going to practices and things like that, you know, as much as mom and dad want to be there, they can't always be there. And they can't sit there and wait for them because they may have other kids. They've got obligations at home that they need to take care of. Just, you know, getting a kid somewhere and then going back and getting dinner ready so that when everybody does get home, you can actually sit down and eat a meal together. It's just not feasible. And, you know, quite honestly, you know, parents want to, you know, they want to be able to contact their kids nowadays. You know, the days of, you know, sending the kid down the street and letting him play at a friend's house for a few hours and, you know, you just yell out the door and they hear you and they come running, that, those are gone, you know. And, you know, so it's a little saddening that that's gone, but it's just the reality. And, you know, enter the cell phone. You know, that's the way I can contact them. I can keep track of my kid and know where they're at. But as far as the right age goes, you know, my daughter's a third grader right now, and there's kids in her class that have a cell phone. I'm sorry, there's no need for a 9-year-old to have a cell phone. If folks out there have their kids with a cell phone at that age, I just can't see the value in that myself. I don't know, you know, I don't know that anybody has an idea on the right age, but, you know, just that young just seems just a little bit overkill to me. You know, maybe once they enter middle school, there are more activities then at that point. You can kind of justify seeing them being after school to, you know, if they're participating in some middle school sports or, you know, something like a math team or something like that where, you know, hey, mom, I'm ready to come home now or whatever. But, you know, kids, when they're done in elementary school, you know, they're either getting off the bus, they're going to after school care, or mom's there to pick them up. You know, I just, to me, when you're in elementary school, I think it's too young. Personally, in middle school, I think it's even a little too young as well. My older two, they didn't get cell phones until they were in high school. And it's, you know, even then, I think it's up to the parent. They have to decide, you know, not only what's the need I'm really trying to fulfill, but is my child ready to handle it? You know, how are they going to treat that cell phone once they get it?
Right.
You know, are they going to abuse it by being on the phone all the time? Are they going to be sitting there texting and, you know, and not paying attention to the family and up all hours of the night, you know, texting and Facebooking or whatever with their friends on their phones? You got to look and evaluate, is your kid ready for that?
Yeah. You know, I like your approach with that. I really do. We've kind of taken the approach in our family of we do the approach of when they're ready. And I don't mean that as vague as it sounds. But, you know, I'll be straight. I have seen at least one 5-year-old who I think could handle a cell phone right now. And that's my oldest daughter. I mean, she the other day, Paul, she said, "Dad, I want a cat." And so I was like, oh, man, here goes the guy. Because every time I hear animals, what I really see is me three to four weeks down the line, I'm going to be taking care of them. And I don't want to. I just don't want to. I love having cats and whatnot. She said, Dad, I want a cat. And I looked at her and I said, no, I don't think so. She was like, Dad, come on, man. I'll take care of everything. And I was like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay. But in my mind, I'm like, yeah, right. Yeah, we'll see.
Right.
We'll see about that first litter box change when you're in the middle of playing Wii, if you're really going to take care of everything. But let me tell you, my little daughter Anna has blown my socks off at how she has really taken care of everything. I mean, she's gotten up when she didn't want to go take care of them and do this and do that. And she's picking up everything, and I have been amazingly impressed with that. So she was ready. And watching her responsibility level, I think she could handle a cell phone. Now, she has no need for one because she doesn't go anywhere. She doesn't go anywhere where she can't have an adult call somebody. And so, you know, it's not a necessity. But I'll be honest, I've done a lot of work with teens. And I've seen some 17 to 19-year-olds who didn't have any business having a cell phone.
No, you're exactly right.
They would break them. They would lose them. It was obvious that they didn't care about them. And I think you can argue, is it really about them not caring about the cell phone? Probably not. But because they probably didn't buy it themselves, there's no real purchase. There's no buy-in. Forgive the euphemism there, but there's no buy-in. And so they don't really care about it that much because, oh, we can just have mom and dad buy another one for me. And so, but we take that approach of just when they're ready and how well do they take care of their things? Could they handle it? And so, you know, and also necessity, I guess, too. How much do they really need one as well?
Yeah, exactly. I think you really have to address the need thing there because all the kids are going to want them, and they're all going to come up with reasons that they need them too. But, you know, for my – you know, I've got a 16-year-old right now, and just a week or so ago, he actually went out and bought his first prepaid phone, and it was because he's working now, had not been working before, and it was one of the things that, you know, we told him, and he's not very much involved in after-school activities, so, you know, he didn't he just didn't have much of a need for it either. Of course, he always wanted one. You know, everybody has one, and part of our, you know, approach with it was, all right, you know, he's working. This gives him an opportunity to, you know, learn a little bit about the value of money and make some decisions about what he wants to do with his money. So we would not let him buy a cell phone.
Sure.
And it's still early in the game. Of course, he's still enamored with it, you know, but the first time that cell phone gets, you know, lost or broken or taken up in school or something like that, you know, maybe he looks back then and says, you know, was that the right thing to do? Did I at that age need, you know, to spend money on something like that? It's a tough call. It's, you know, there is the responsibility aspect. There's also the need aspect. And you know, I think some parents feel like there's more of a need than there really is. So, you know, they just equip their kids with cell phones. And cell phone manufacturers nowadays, you know, you've probably seen some of these that's got the big buttons and the call mom, call home,
Firefly,
you know, things
like that.
Firefly, right. And so they're marketing to kids, and they're wanting to get these kids engaged in doing this and getting the kids tugging at their parents, you know, and saying, hey, you know, I need. And it's tough for parents to decide when's ready for that, you know. So, yeah, I think that's something we can go into. You know, I think the next thing we're going to talk about is, you know, the type of cell phones and safeguards that you can put on these cell phones. What do you think about that?
You know, that's a tough one too. I struggle with this question too, because, you know, the idea is what kind of safeguards do we need for cell phones? What should we be doing with, golly, I think it comes down to what are the kids ready for? You know, what are the kids able to handle? You know, whenever I first got my first cell phone, it was back when Nokia was still making those brick phones. That, you know,
yep.
I mean, they were the candy bar styled phones. But I mean, these were the phones. Like, I dropped mine off of a second story apartment, and I thought, oh, that's a goner. And it got down there, and it was fine. That was a great phone for me. And I knew that going well up into my early adulthood. I knew I didn't need an iPhone. Because that was a cell phone that was going to break on me. I was going to bust it. That's just the way I am. And so I always bought military specification phones like the Samsung Rugby. And but there came a point to where I just – there was just something happened. And I think it was when I started having to buy my own phone. and then another company came out that I think was the most smartest company ever, and that was called OtterBox. When
right.
OtterBox came out, that was the first time I thought maybe I can start thinking about an iPhone. What do you think?
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, you got those, you got your physical protections there that you got to have for kids. They see, you know, they see the parents with, you know, an iPhone or, you know, something similar that's got all this functionality built into it, and they want it too. And, you know, I don't know how many shattered screens you walk around and see, and these kids still trying to use a shattered screen, for an iPhone. You know, OtterBox is great. My cell phone and my wife's cell phone today is wrapped up in that OtterBox. I've got an iPod Touch that I listen to for music, and it's got an OtterBox wrapped around it too. You know, hey, for the money and for what it costs, if you're going to get your kids a cell phone, and parents, you too, if you're going to carry one around, for the price that these things cost to replace, if you're not going to buy the insurance, you definitely buy the OtterBox. I think that's the best insurance that's out there, because, you know, it's not going to protect from theft, but to me, the way all the plans are nowadays, where it's unlimited everything, you know, people don't really have a desire to steal a cell phone anymore, except for, you know, maybe the functionality, but it's a whole lot more likely you're going to drop that thing or send it swimming or something. And, you know, there's cases and stuff out there that's really good for that. And, you know, we'll keep you from buying that phone mid, you know, during the middle of your contract and trying to justify, you know, $400 expense just to, you know, because you, you know, couldn't hang on to it or something. You know, what about, let's take this a little bit further. You know, what about some of the functionality that the carriers are providing nowadays, where, you know, you can turn on, where parents can track where the cell phones in their service are, and you can get logs of all the texts and MMS that goes across there. What's your thoughts, Trey, about kids? If you're going to give your kids cell phones, what's your thought about turning those things on, sharing, you know, bouncing that against, okay, you know, you know, respect for, you know, for their distance, for a little bit of privacy and things like that. What do you think? Should parents be turning all these things on their kids' phones?
That's a tough one for me, and it's a slippery slope. In some cases, I would say that maybe that might be a possibility. But I'm a big guy when it comes to focusing on trust in our kids. Whenever we take the Big Brother approach, you know, the Patriot Act approach, where it's going to be, we're going to watch and monitor every single thing that you are doing, it makes me a little nervous. Because in those cases, I think it says, it communicates to kids, you can't trust people. And I think it tells kids, we can't trust you. And a lot of times kids have a tendency to believe what we tell them. And so if we're saying to them by, you know, I've got this program on your cell phone and I'm watching every single thing you're doing and I'm reading every single text that you're doing, I think in a lot of ways it can say, I don't trust you. Now, I do think kids can lose trust. If you catch one of your kids, for instance, sexting. That's a major offense right now, and it is a hot topic, and it is something that if you get busted doing in a school, for instance, there's going to be major repercussions. And so I do believe that in some cases, if kids have proven that they're not ready for that trust, but maybe we still need to keep a cell phone on them, and I say need so loosely, they didn't need cell phones in the 1950s, for instance. So
right.
We know kids can survive without them. Yep. But if, you know, we need that for them to be able to call us when they're done with whatever practice or whatnot, you know, so I have no problems with that for an accountability, but I always encourage parents, if you do use a safeguard like that, make sure that your motivation is not about, now I've got my eye on you. It's about, I am trying to offer you that accountability so I can get you back to a place where I trust you again, and then we can take this off because you're good now. You know, so that's kind of my approach about it. What do you think?
That's good. We have I take the trust but verify approach, you know. And when I say that, I don't mean that you turn on every safeguard that's out there, but getting back to something I said earlier, you know, we got to understand these kids are going to be attracted to having some of that freedom that's there. So, you know, if you don't want to turn them on to start with, and I think that's good, you know, don't turn it on until you need it. You know, don't be afraid to do a spot check. And when you hand your kid the phone and tell it, you know, give it to them in the first place, hey, at any time, anywhere, if I tell you I want to see your cell phone, I want you to unlock it and I want you to let me look at the whole thing. If you can't do that, we're not going to even start down the cell phone road. But, you know, take your kid's phone, look at it sometime, be involved, you know, see what they're doing. And if you see signs that there's something that you need to be keeping an eye out for example, you see your kid's thumbs flying across that phone all the time. time, sending text here and there. But when you look at the phone, there's four messages on there.
That's good.
They're deleting messages. There's a reason they're deleting messages, because they know you're going to be looking for them. So if you're seeing that kind of behavior in your child, you need to have that hard conversation with them. Don't avoid the situation. And if you have to, you turn it on and you tell them it's turned on, and you tell them why you're turning it on, because, you know, something's going on here. I don't know what it is, but I've got to figure it out, because just because they don't understand the dangers that's associated with doing it.
Paul, you're bringing up an amazing point, another safeguard. And I'll be honest, I didn't even consider going this direction with safeguards until you brought this up. But parents out there that are listening to this, you need to listen to me. You need to talk to your kid about sexting today. If they have a cell phone and they are in that middle preteen teenage where sex is starting to become more lucrative to them, you need to talk to them about sexting. I have worked and counseled with kids who were caught in their schools, and they were turned into – I'm talking worth a 13-year-old little girl was turned into a social pariah. She was shunned as a pervert. She was a little girl because she was swapping these sexting pictures of her naked with another little boy. And she was treated like she was a sexual pervert from then on. It hurt the family's reputation. It hurt hers in the school, did severe damage to her emotionally and mentally. You need to talk to your kids about what it is and what your feelings on it are as a family, about doing it, not doing it, whatever your thoughts. You need to communicate that to your kids, because if you don't, some little Sally or John at school is going to tell it to him, and I am going to wager my money that they are not going to pitch it to him the way you would want that pitched to him. Talk to your kids about sexting. It is majorly important.
Let me tell you something else about that, too. The way these cell phones work nowadays, when that gets sent across there and the kid on the other end gets that, how easy is it for that kid on their Facebook account to upload that and to tag that person? And guess what? It's out there. It's out there. You're not going to go to Facebook and get it back. It's out on the internet then. And for your kids to think that it's safe because they, quote, trust the person that's on the other end, I don't think for a minute that they can don't let them be under that disillusion that they're safe and from that just because they know the person that's receiving it on the other end. They may know who's receiving it, but they don't know who's standing around looking at it with them, and they don't know what – they might send off there too. You know, once it goes out into that internet, it's free for the world to see.
You know, there's another term too that parents are to listen. You've probably heard, but there's what's called going viral. And anytime something is going viral is that if something hits any kind of social media platform on the internet, then what happens is somebody shares it. So on Facebook, it's as easy as button click, bam, share. Now all of a sudden that picture or story becomes onto their web. Well, then their 500 friends that they may have see it and they go, oh, then they click it. There was a video, and I did an episode on it a while back, but a dad who upset with his daughter got super upset with her because, you know, she had written this I felt like it was a fairly good expression done in a poor way, but he got real upset with her for writing this letter on her computer. So he takes her computer out and shoots it with his 1911 and then puts it on his Facebook. Well, it went viral. And in one day, it was actually less than 9 hours, he had 50,000 views, which means 50,000 people had viewed that video and then reshared it, and it went viral. And so sure. Paul's bringing up a good point here to parents too, is that's a fantastic thought. If it gets shared on Facebook, stuff like that can go viral, and more people than you could have ever. Back in the small days, I went to a small school, and we had a phrase in that school that says, you couldn't poop in that town without everybody knowing what color it was. And forgive the expression on that, but if you thought it was bad then, now that you can have 500 friends on your Facebook, it's even worse. Great, great point. Any other safeguards that we want to hit on, Paul, before we move on?
I think those are just the ones there. You know, think about it. There's trackers for your kids, things like that. I've got a friend that I work with, just a real brief story. His 16-year-old daughter likes to be places where she's not supposed to be, and he's got that turned on her cell phone. She doesn't know it, and it's almost funny to hear the way he tells the stories, but, you know, it gives him an ability to keep track of where she is, and, you know, and to have those conversations with her and hopefully to try and shape some of her behavior and in the future, say, you know, build some accountability into her. So there's a lot of stuff out there to sell companies are offering nowadays. But, you know, just as Trey said earlier, you know, think about it before you put it on there just because it's available, because we do ultimately want to trust our kids. But, you know, but it's, you know, we know how that goes. You know, kids are kids and they're learning, and, you know, they're not just learning from us, they're learning from others too. So we started to talk about social media there real quick, Trey, you know, and Facebook. You know, one of the thoughts I had was there's so many outlets now for social media. You know, how do we know, how do we keep track of what our kids are really doing on Facebook? And the reason I ask this question is I discovered on one of my kids' accounts, my 16-year-old, he's my spirited type. He's got his Facebook profile that, you know, is the one that the parents see. But as another profile that is a friend of his, you know, quote, friend of his on Facebook, but it's a profile that he controls. He logs in under another name, and all of his friends, I caught him at one time, all of his friends, if he's going to have conversations, he's logging in through this ID to do that, you know, and that's the whole trust but verify thing. That's part of where I get from that earlier. But how do you think, Trey, we can keep track of what our kids are really doing? If you put this cell phone in their hand that has smartphone capabilities, and you put a laptop in their bedroom, and even things like, you know, their PS3s and stuff like that nowadays has direct connections to the internet, how do we keep track of what they're really doing when they're on social media?
You know, I think that's a fantastic question. It's one that having counseled a lot over the last few years, it's one of the primary concerns of a lot of parents. My favorite way that I have stumbled upon is a program called Action Alert from actionalert.com. Very, very comprehensive stuff. The reason I like it is there's a free version of it that you can put on your computer, and it just allows you to do basic tracking, see what's going on, keep the history. So even if kids come in and wipe the history, it remains in there. And so if there ever it does become a point where you begin to kind of you're suspicious of activity, you can just go and pop those logs out and take a look at them. They have a premium version that you can pay for that will do everything from take screenshots to record conversations, direct messages that kids send on Facebook. And so it's really kind of the upgraded level. I really like it personally. Again, I think it is one of those tools that, like we've talked about throughout this interview, you've got to be so careful with it because, I mean, your kids are just kind of waiting for that opportunity, not yours specifically, Paul, but kids are just waiting for that opportunity to go, oh, you don't trust me, you know? And I understand how they feel when they say that. And again, kids have a tendency to believe however we treat them. So if we treat them as in, I don't trust you, so I'm going to put these things on here. I have watched it.
Then I'm not trustworthy. Yeah.
Exactly. They'll act that way. Like you were saying, they'll act, oh, well, if they don't think I'm trustworthy, I must not be trustworthy. So why try to prove them wrong? I might as well just be untrustworthy. At least that's kind of fun in its own ways. And so, but Action Alert's one of my favorite because there's a free program that you can do that you can get completely free, or you can pay, and that paid one, I only named about 1/8 of the features that it has, but it can be very comprehensive. It can save screenshots, clicks, etc., just about everything without having to add like some kind of adapter to the back. What experiences have you had with them?
I've had a couple of years ago when my oldest was still at home, we had some issues come up with his use on Facebook, and we put a program in at the time. You may have heard of it. It's called Net Nanny.
Yes.
And we kept that going for a year, and he understood that we were watching and, you know, monitoring what was going on and things like that. And It's the same kind of thing, you know, very comprehensive, gives you logs about what they're visiting, when they're visiting. It'll capture keystrokes and let you see, you know, what's going across as far as emails, text, instant messages, things like that. You know, one of the limits I found to it, though, and maybe this Action Alert does something differently, you know, it was limited at that time anyway to your laptops and PCs at home. You know, getting it onto, you know, some of these other platforms like I was talking about where, you know, you can keep track of, you know, what your kids are doing when they're on a smartphone or things like that. You know, I don't know whether Net Nanny does something like that, but, you know, I'm sure there's things that are out there, you know, for that. And you know, to know what your kids are really doing, you know, it is tough. It's, you know, because these pay, you know, all these services, you know, for social media, they're all hosted out on the internet, right? So you think you can protect your PC at home and you've got something installed there, and you think maybe even you've got an app that you got installed on the, on their Android or their iPhone or something like that, and you've got it installed there. But what happens when they go over to a friend's house and log on to their computer and use their profile over there? Hey, there's nothing that's going to keep, you know, that's going to keep track of what your kid's doing under their Facebook profile, you know, doing that when they're not using one of the devices that you're tracking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's tough. It's so tough, I think, just because of the proliferation of this technology. All the social media is in the cloud. So if you've got any device that can access it, you know, you can get there, and you can't possibly go out and protect all 4 billion devices in the world and make sure that it tells you what your kid's doing on the internet. To me, it's just, you know, the possibilities out there are just really, you know, it's almost frightening to think just, you know, how many ways they can get access to it, and how you think that you might be protecting it here. But, you know, the kids, like we said at the opening of the show, kids are so smart. They know how to get around these things. They know, you know, they just know how this stuff works and how to use it. So there's some things there, but just, you know, parents, if you put it on, just you got to understand the limits of it too.
There is one more program I'll speak for from personal direct use. Also, there's another one called CovenantEyes.com. This one is a little bit different. So, well, what's the difference between that and all the other ones that you can suggest? Because there's a lot of really good ones out there. This particular one doesn't actually block anything. But what it does is it keeps a record of every single place that you go, every single website, and then it packages it up and it sends it to the Covenant Eyes server. And then it goes through there and it ranks them for each one that have what's called quote-unquote questionable material. And it ranks out any one of those that are on there. And if there's one that you know, has like, you know, excuse my language here, but like boobs and butts or something like that, you know, and that, then it'll rank that high. And then it sends your accountability partners, quote-unquote, a log. And then it shows what's on there, and it can show if there's any questionable stuff. And then you can, you know, you can approach and address somebody. You can have different accounts for different kids. So if you've got one for A, B, and C kid, and then, you know, C kid comes up, and then there's their whatchamado, and then there's their stuff, and then you can go and ask them a question about it. Again, it doesn't block anything. It does not filter anything. So if you, like, I've had some parents that have a hard time with things getting blocked, because sometimes a lot of these filtering programs will block things that they're not wanting to have blocked. And it can be kind of a rigmarole process for it. So, again, some parents may prefer that method, maybe not. You bring me to my next question, truthfully, Paul. The infamous question, what about social media? We've talked a little bit about Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, LinkedIn, MySpace. What are your thoughts about having kiddos on, even young kiddos, on these kinds of platforms?
Whenever you sign up for these sites, especially I think Facebook for sure, you know, says, you know, you have to say that I'm over 13. Well, guess what? You know, a kid, all they've got to do is change their birth date in there, and then they're voila, they're over 13. As far as kids getting into that kind of stuff early, it just, I think there's a reason that Facebook puts that limit out there for the age of 13. And I think it's because they understand that it's a, when you get out and you get into a site like that, it is the free for all nature of what's out there. And, you know, to that, the ability to filter or to not filter, and for everything to just come across, you know, as soon as somebody puts a status update out there, you know, good, bad, indifferent, unless you've done something to hide that from your profile, it's on there. And it's in kids, you know, and I question even, you know, at the age of 13, you start early on something like that, Trey. And the problem is that kids start to build this online reputation that's going to follow them forever, and this online identity. And like we were talking earlier, pictures that get out there and get tagged to them, and things that they video that they might be in, and any number of things, a status that they might post where they just, you know, just had a bad day and had to lash out at a, you know, about a teacher or a parent or something like that. You know, all that stuff is out there and it follows them. And I don't think kids understand fully the implications of that, you know, going out there and putting stuff like that out on the internet where they think they're just talking to their friends or people that want to see and follow them. You know, more and more colleges nowadays, as you know, as part of the admission process, they are doing not just background checks, but they're doing your social media and internet presence checks. And in doing so, they find these things, you know, and where you might have presented yourself through your application and your process for admission that you were, you know, an upright, upstanding citizen, and then you go out and you find these things on the internet, you know, there's colleges that you know, they'll pull scholarships, they'll pull admissions, you know, and they'll, you know, they'll deny admissions to kids for you know, for these things. And you know, that's, you know, that's some of the sad reality of it. You know, some of the stuff that's, you know, sad and even more scary is, you know, what you were talking about earlier. You put the wrong kind of information out there and the wrong, and the right person sees it. Yeah. You committed a crime, you know, and kids just don't know. And I think, you know, I think for that reason, you know, young kids, definitely, they don't need to be there. My 9-year-old, she does not have a Facebook. She doesn't do anything with social media. She will, you know, do some things from time to time on the internet where, you know, some of these, you know, little Nickelodeon game sites or something like that. But she does it on a computer that's parked in our bedroom, and one of us are in there with her when she does it. You know, she doesn't have a computer in her room. She doesn't have a laptop. She doesn't run on a PC unsupervised like that. So, you know, at those young ages, I agree. I think they're just not a place for kids, not in social media. It's cool technology, but they're too young.
You know, there's kind of a dichotomy of an idea, and I wanted to hit on this point a little bit to see what you thought on it. But, you know, I've seen parents that when it comes to the 13-year-old restrictions on Facebook, you know, should we let those under 13 have one? I had a mom who pitched a really good point once. She goes, I'm afraid that my daughter's going to go do it anyway, so is it really worth putting up restrictions if she's just going to turn around and do it behind my back? I've seen, and I understand that point. I get what she's saying. The other flip to the side of that I've heard is that, you know, never compromise your values. And if you say that there's a rule that says, oh, you never compromise, you never teach a kid to compromise that, what are your thoughts?
I think you set an example early on about that. I do see the rationale there, and I do know that there's ways around it. And if kids want to do it, you know, they just, you know, they either just check the checkbox that attests that I am over 13, whether they are or aren't, or they change their birth dates to you know, so that the math says that they're over 13. There's ways that they can do it, and it, to me, you know, again, I hear what a parent is saying, but I feel like they're just giving up and giving in at that point. And I think what a kid needs to see and understand from a parent is that, you know, a parent is not a friend. You know, we can have a friend-based relationship or so much more with our kids, but we shouldn't be our kids' friends. We, you know, just because, okay, let's use the same argument then. You know, my kid's 17. If they want to go get something to drink, they're going to get somebody to buy it for them anyway. I may as well buy something to bring it for them in the home.
Good example. Yeah.
How far do you want to take that? They can't buy cigarettes. Well, they want to smoke. I may as well go ahead and buy it for them too. You know, just because it's something that you can do as a parent and you think you're doing something to enable your kid, it doesn't make it the right thing to do.
Yeah, I spot on agree with you. The good thing that I saw coming out of that was at that stage was whenever I was talking, we were doing some parent education, and we were talking about the idea of negotiation and compromise with our kids and how valuable it is to teach our kids to compromise and to negotiate with people rather than demand, you're going to do it my way or it's the highway. And we were moving her away from that process, so she was really starting to get it. But whenever I taught that, I always pushed that. Okay, yeah, we want to negotiate and compromise, but you never negotiate and compromise on values. Never negotiate and compromise on values. Those things that are so morally important to them that we actually practice them. Never, ever compromise on those things, because what it communicates is, well, hey, it's okay on some things to let it fudge. You know, it's okay to break, rules that are set up, you know, which if you're not careful can translate over into laws. Well, it's okay to go 80 on this road sometimes because, you know, that, you know, and so I never encourage to do that. My approach is, and I am very much, try to meet kids in the middle. My approach when people ask me about that is I say, don't do it, because it's teaching a kid. It's okay to break rules if you want to. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I put a post up yesterday on my blog site, and the title of it is Seen Through Your Kids' Eyes. And it's the whole premise of it is that your kids are watching. Your kids are – you parents, whether you think you are or not, you are still the greatest influence in your child's life. And they are watching you from the time that they are born all the way up into adulthood, and they're watching to see how you react to things and how you personally compromise on things and whether you're consistent with what you say and what you do. And if your kids pick up on that, parents, that you're willing to bend and flex and that your word is not as good as your actions are or vice versa, then, you know, what do we expect when our kids do the same thing too? You're right. I think values, morals, and ethics, that was one of the paragraphs in there. You just, if you're not willing to teach those to your kids, by gosh, somebody is. And you want to leave that to chance?
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, you hit on something too that I say so often on this show that I guarantee you that some parents are ready to hit me over the head with their, you know, iPhone or their laptop, whatever they're listening to me on. But one of the things we say over and over and over is, who is watching you to learn? Everything they are going to do in life, your kids are. So you better be acting the way you want them to act. And that's great that you bring that up. Hey, let's talk about another slice of this pie. What are your thoughts on video game playing? I'm getting to see this in my son. My son is turning out to be my little techno dude, and he loves his Elite Pad. He loves the cell phone. He loves to be on the computer. I mean, on the Wii and on the Xbox. He loves playing video games, and I'm watching to see as he can get consumed in what he is doing. So what are your thoughts on video game playing, in terms of time, usage online, and all the things that come with that?
I think it's interesting. In our house, video games used to be the biggest thing too. And we have a Wii and we have a PS3 here in the house. And, in our house, it's not getting as much airplay nowadays. And I think it's because there's more of these other things we've been talking about, the other draws online and stuff like that, that kids are wanting to do nowadays. I think we see kids that, plug into video games and, you know, what they're wanting to do is the same thing we've been talking about. They're not satisfied to sit and play a one or two player game while, you know, it's just them or maybe them and a friend in the same room with them playing anymore. They want to be online. They want to play these third-person shooter games or these games where you're working in some kind of community with people, you know, maybe across the street or around the world, to do some sort of, to meet some sort of goal with the game. And it's more than that. It's the interaction that they have. You know, people plug in these headphones while they play, and they're having these conversations and communications. And for those that do that, they seem to immerse themselves in this game, and it's almost as if it's a transformative alternate reality for them, and that while they're in that, they're able to assume this other personality or persona that that they can't otherwise do when they're disengaged or unplugged from the game. So, hey, video games are fun, and if you've seen some of the graphics and the renderings that are on the these things come up on displays nowadays, they're amazing. I mean, you can see why a person would get sucked into that alternate reality and want to spend time there doing that. I think with everything, there's a healthy limit there. One of the things that drives my 16-year-old crazy more than anything else, and drove his older brother crazy too, was that they wanted to play the M-rated games, the mature-rated games, and it was mostly things like Call of Duty or Halo or something like that.
Yeah.
I would not let them bring those in the home. I said, you're not going to buy a mature game, you know, not until you're at that level where they rate it out there. And to me, the primary reason is because, let's face it, the folks that are rating these games and are putting these standards and levels that out there, that's a minimum assessment that, you know, they're giving just the bare minimum to cross over this line. It's just like a movie, you know. You don't want to take your kid into an R-rated movie for obvious reasons. There's reasons that game is rated mature. And just because you're sitting beside your son playing the game doesn't make it okay. I think that parents need to watch those limits, to watch the teen-rated games for the younger kids, to watch the mature-rated games for the teens, and make their own judgment. But I think there's a reason that those ratings are on there, and it's to protect these kids and to give the parents some idea of the kind of content that's in that game. As far as limits go, again, there's a healthy limit for everything. If it's all your kid does, just like using a cell phone or something like that, if it's all your kid does or all your kid wants to do, maybe should have a talk about what kind of limits you place on them.
You know, that's good too. You know, we take the same approach as you do when it comes to movies with our kids and video games with our kids. But, you know, anytime parents ask me, what should I do? How much is too far, Trey? I always kind of take the approach of, I don't get really concerned. It's not for me and my family, but I don't get concerned when I see parents letting younger kids watch rated R. I don't get concerned whenever I see, you know, parents buying their younger kids M-rated mature games. Again, it's not for my family. It's not my choice. The only thing that bothers me is when parents buy that but have no interaction or no action that they take to educate themselves to understand the game. I had a mom who had bought one of the San Andreas. What game is that? The one where you can drive around and do just about anything you want. What is that? You know what I'm talking about.
Gran Turismo or something like that.
Grand Theft Auto. And I remember they went and bought them this game, and I said, and I knew kind of what their values were, and I'd been working with them. I said, have you ever seen them play that game? He's like, no, what do you mean? I said, right. You have the option to buy a prostitute at one point in this game. And I mean, her face went literally, I mean, this lady changed two shades of white.
Buy a prostitute, like, really? To shoot police officers. It's crazy.
Exactly. And she just didn't know. That's the only time I get really concerned is when parents buy things for kids that are video game or movie related, but they don't do the research on them. One of the things that I recommend when it comes to like looking this up is there's a place called PluggedIn.com. And I think it's an extension of Focus on the Family. Now, that is a religious-based organization. But their PluggedIn.com is amazing because they do intensive reviews over movies and games. They'll probably give you way more information than you want to know. But I recommend log into it. Take a look at that. And I gave this to that mom. And from then on, she never bought a game that she didn't walk through PluggedIn.com first before she picked it up. And so that's what I recommend. I think you bring up a fantastic point. Make sure that you are aware of what your kids are playing, what's in them, what kind of content is there, and then if you don't buy it for them, just do it better than, well, because it's M. Let them know why. It's because there's M, because it has – I mean, you can buy a prostitute, and that's not okay, you know, letting them know these reasons behind so it doesn't come off as big, bad wolf mommy and daddy are just trying to keep me from having fun like all my friends do. No, it's not about that. It's about me trying to protect you from doing these things that this is not okay behavior and that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure. I agree with you, Trey. It's You wouldn't – if you think about some of the other things you just wouldn't buy for your kids, who you're like, well, that's just not safe for them. You know, you don't know whether the video game's safe or not. Just because it's wrapped in a pretty wrapper and is, on a DVD format doesn't make it safe, you know. And just because, you know, Sony or Nintendo or somebody like that put it out, again, understand what you're putting in your kids' hands and what they're consuming.
There was a research article when I was going through all this. I was trying to educate myself so that way I could really teach her a lot about all this. And I found an article that showed that out of 100 people that they surveyed at a Walmart who bought the new Grand Theft Auto game when it had come out, less than 5% of them actually knew what the rating was and why it was rated for that. Only 5% knew. Now, some of them might have just lied because maybe they did know, but they were just giving in anyway. I don't know, but that just shocks me. That just absolutely shocks me. And truthfully,
I know.
If it hadn't have been for my wife, I probably would have grown up like that too. I would have done the same thing with my kids because I just didn't think about it. And she was the one who really taught me to slow down, look what we're buying, and I owe a lot of thanks to her for that. Let me kind of get us moving because we're running out of time here.
Okay.
Another question that you brought up, and I had to actually clarify this one with you in the intro. For instance, the other day I was on my phone. I noticed that when I published my Facebook status, it put a link to exactly where I was. And I didn't even authorize that in this case. But I've seen in other ones where kids are putting exactly where they are when they're at the mall, watching at the Cinemark Theater in the mall. It's putting exactly where they are and tagging them. What do you think about that?
It's wild. It's amazing how all this stuff works together. You know, it's we've you know, if you're a tech guy, you've heard this phrase Web 2.0, and it's the integration of all these different web services that are out there working together to enable some amazing functionality sure. on these phones and things like that. And it's very cool, and there's some real practical applications for that. You know, when you download an app or you put something onto your phone and you turn it on, you know, one of the first things that it does is ask you all of these privacy preferences. You know, mm-hmm. This is what this application is going to do to your phone or what it's going to read from your phone. Are you okay with that? And how many of us have gone through and just clicked okay without reading exactly what that thing's going to do on the phone? It will do things like, you know, read your text messages. It will do things like check your status and post. You know, post statuses. If you do Twitter, it'll automatically post statuses there and stuff like that. And the one thing you're talking about is your location. You know, and when you think about your location and your kids and that being published, you know, so that somebody. Now, let's go back and tie in the other social media stuff. Somebody ties in to Facebook, and if your privacy settings maybe aren't right on your kid's account or something like that, you know, what if, you know, this Facebook status updated and said that that my kid was, like you said, at the movie theater, and their privacy status on Facebook allows their location to be published to everyone. Now, everyone in the world, potentially anyone that's on Facebook, can know where your kid is and when they're there. If that's not a scary proposition, I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. Especially for, you know, the kind of people that unfortunately we all know that are out there in this world, and prey on young kids like that. Yeah. So it's you got to know, and the more functional of a cell phone you put in your kids' hands, the more opportunity there is for this to happen out there. You know, it gets back to the question about what you're trying to accomplish with your kid having a cell phone. If you just want to be able to reach them, by gosh, you can just put a plain old telephone in their hand,
yeah.
and have one that doesn't have any of these features, don't download apps or anything like that, and you're able to call them, and they're able to call you just fine. So you know, really think about that when you're giving your kids this kind of technology. It's a little bit unnerving to think about the kind of stuff that can be published out there, and you know that you know, breaks privacy and things like that. Things that you think are otherwise private, you know, they're out there for the world to see, you know, just because the technology enables it.
You know, I thought my settings were really high, you know, and especially back when I was doing therapy, you know. One of the things I was concerned about was you know, there's an element of privacy that we want to have and whatnot. And so I went in and I set all my settings and I went back and was doing my social work type stuff. And then one day a lady came in, she goes, yeah, I went and checked you out on Facebook and I was looking at this and I saw those pictures of you when you were at an airsoft thingy that you were going to and all these other things. I mean, I was just like, what in the world? I already set these to where, so I went and created a faux account under another email address, and then went to go see what I could see.
See if you could see it. Yep.
There was nothing private.
Right.
I could see everything, pictures, info, and I thought I had it perfect. Went in, tried it again, tried it a second time. Still didn't get what I did. I had to go and look on Google, how do I make my settings as private as possible? And then I had to follow step-by-step instructions. And I got done with that and thought, holy smokes, that was the most ridiculously complicated process I have ever gone through for anything online. Personally, I think that's the way Facebook wants it. Facebook wants all your stuff published out there because it's a part of what they use to help make their new algorithms for their new edge ranking and all that other good jazz I won't get into.
That's right.
But they want all that information out there, and they make it very difficult. I encourage you, if you're wanting your stuff private, go Google how to do it, set it up. Have your kids do it as well, and always make sure you're telling your kids why you're doing that too. It's not just you being a big bad wolf again, but it's because you're trying to protect them and protect their privacy. Some parents have said, well, should I tell them about sexual predators? That's a tricky question. It depends on what your kid's ready for. But I agree that for the amount that they're ready for, they need to be aware that there are some very bad people out there that are hurting inside, and they will do some nasty, nasty things. That doesn't mean you give them details, but kids need to know that not everybody's trustworthy like mommy and daddy. Not everybody's trustworthy like the police officer. Some people you cannot trust. And so educating that on that as soon as possible is absolutely valuable.
Yeah, you hit on a good point there. You know, the settings that are out of the box on something like Facebook or something like that, they're not for your interest. They're for Facebook's interest.
That's good.
There's a reason they're making it free to use, because they're hoping to get something from it. And, you know, Facebook is a, you know, multi-billion dollar company. There's a reason for that, because of all the popularity and of all the information and data that they can get from people and share out with, you know, companies and whatnot.
I'm going to be honest, Paul. I'm stealing that phrase that you just said there. The settings that come out of the box with Facebook are not about your interests. It's about Facebook interests. I'm stealing that from you and using it. No, that's good.
Right.
No, spot on. That's excellent. Well, let's wrap it up with our final question here too, because we're a little over an hour here. So okay. I think this is probably the most important question, and you submitted this question, and I was so glad that you ended on this one. How do we balance the usefulness of all of this technology? Again, I don't think saying you strike it out of your home, I don't think that's the approach. I think that can cause a rift that can be more destructive than anything. Maybe that's the answer for some families. I think it could be, but it's not going to be the one that we turn to first. So how do we balance this in such a way where we keep our kids safe, but we allow them to have access?
You started to say that early on, and I knew we were going to talk about it later, so I had to kind of hold my tongue there. let's face it. The world that we live in today, the world that your kids are going to grow up in and eventually work in nowadays, just like I said, it's the first generation that has never known the world without the internet. And it's going to get that much more prevalent. There's going to be now kids that don't know the world without the iPhone, and don't know the world without the iPad, and don't know the world without Facebook at some point down the road. Social media and all of these things are a reality. It is a part of our lives. And in the workplace even, companies are figuring out how to use social media to not only get some of this marketing type information, but how to leverage it and use it to their advantage. Just like I mentioned earlier, we do this across Skype. It is a technology that's pretty recent out there. But it's something that, because we know how to use it, you know, it gives us an advantage to be able to do something like this and bring this to your listeners, Trey. You know, folks that are going to be able to use this kind of technology to be smart with it, to know how to make the technology work together and do different things. You know, we're in the information age, and that's going to be their ticket, you know, down the road, is, you know, how they can make these things work together and stuff like that. So taking it away from your kids, thinking that by you not exposing them to it, I think you shortchange them for, you know, what they're, you know, going to be asked to do in the future in their workplace and everything else. So there is a balance, I believe. I think there's some usefulness to the technology, not just for, not just for adults, but, you know, maybe even for kids too. You know, there's some really cool stuff out there that, you know, schools are starting to do with social media and some of these different platforms as well. So your kids need to be exposed to it, and the more that they understand about it, the more useful they come to see it be. So I don't think the approach to taking it out of the home is serves you or serves them well. But there's got to be some kind of balance, and there's got to be there's got to be this acknowledgement that, you know, at the end of the day, we're still people, and however you're interacting on the computer or on your phone or something like that, you still got to know how to deal with and work with people, you know. And, because when you go to your workplace, there's going to be people sitting there. And you can't just go hide behind your computer to have your interactions with them. There's a balance. And I think the more that you see your kids hiding behind these computers and locking themselves in their rooms and doing stuff like this, parents, I hope you can see when that balance is starting to get a little bit out of kilter, and maybe you rein it back in at that point.
You know, I think parents often treat it, the integrating this stuff and balancing it is like kind of like a great mystery. How do I do this, right? You know, how is it? You know, I mean, how do you teach your kids to ride a bicycle? Well, I mean, you sit down and you teach them about how things work. You show them. You work it. You train them on the right way to do it. You train them on the wrong way to do it. You know, the social stuff and technology is no different. But I'll often see parents that, you know, they'll give their kids a computer and then expect them, depending on what their belief systems are, they expect them not to look at porn. And then my first question is, did you ever tell them not to?
Right.
Did you ever educate them as to what pornography is and then what your belief systems are as a family and then why we don't look at that and the you know, whatever it is that you're – did you talk to them about that? Well, no. Then why are you expecting them not to? Did you ever – you know, they'll hand them a phone and then they'll expect them not to text over the limit. And I'm like, did you tell them that they had a limit? Well, no. Did you tell them what that limit was? Did you tell them how to reduce that limit? Did you teach them how to put, you know, Google Talk on there where they can use a Wi-Fi and they don't have to use text? I mean, did you teach them sure. these things? Well, no. Then why do you expect them to know this? Don't get me wrong. Getting a $500 phone bill or something like that would frustrate and irritate the junk out of me too.
Me too. Yep.
But a lot of parents aren't sitting down and teaching their kids how to do this. That's why I'm saying we need to – if your kid's going to get into tech, you need to be a tech guru as much as possible. So then you know – I know some parents listening to this just went, what the heck is Google Talk and how does that work? Mm-hmm. Go look that up because that can be a beautiful thing on an iPhone. They don't have to use text messages for that as long as they've got Wi-Fi. But they need to know that if they're running the 3G or the 4G service, right, that's data. And that's going to be a data transfer if they're not on Wi-Fi. And so there's so many options out there that when we know, but a lot of parents just expect them to know and then give it to them. And then they get in huge trouble. And I think kids go, what just happened? I don't understand, right? But we'll get on to them for what they're doing, but then not educate them how to do it right. So I think one of the first parts out of all of this is doesn't have anything to do with the tech. I mean, you can get into all sorts of ideas of how to monitor and watch. But I think the first thing is we have to teach our kids what our moral and value systems are as families. We've got to be teaching them that or else these kids don't know why it's not okay. They don't understand. So we've got to teach them what do we believe about things like sexting? What do we believe about things about pornography? What do we believe about being stuck and having more relationship with people on a tech device rather than going to their house and seeing them face to face? What do we believe about gossip? Because that can be a big one on Facebook with little kids, right? Gossip is bad enough in a school. Then you give them that access to people all day long on a handheld device. It's just like throwing nitrous oxide in an engine. It just increases performance.
It really is. And, you know, something we didn't even hit on here, you know, that gossip turns into cyberbullying happens to kids like that. It's a dangerous thing. And, you know, your kids need to understand, just like you said, not just the morals and values, but the limits, you know, the boundaries, you know, what's okay, what's not okay. Don't assume that they know all this stuff just because you think they should. They're not going to know if you don't tell them. And like I said earlier, if you're not teaching them, somebody else is.
That's good. I tell you, I'm adding – I keep a running list on Evernote on my iPhone of topics for later. And I tell you right now, I'm adding cyberbullying. That's one that we need to get into. Yeah. It's been on my heart for a while. And addressing it on both sides, what do you do if your kid is getting bullied on online? And what do you do when you find out your kid is the bully online? Sure. And I think we need to address that. So great point for bringing that up. And I'm going to add that. That is added. That is going to be a topic here before too much longer.
Deal.
Well, Paul, any other things that we want to hit? Any other topics that we kind of slipped through that you're like, man, I wish we could have gotten to that we need to double back to?
Boy, you know, if there is, you know, we've took it long today. You know, we probably should save that for another show. But it's a good topic, and it's a neat topic to talk about because technology is very cool. You know, it's fun to do. You know, when your kids get a hold of it, it's fun for them as well. It opens up a whole new world to them. But you know, there's a place for it, and there's a way that parents can teach their kids how to use it in a healthy manner and in a way that it benefits both them and their kids as well.
I think that's good. Well, Paul, as always, I reiterate, the last time that we were here, man, fantastic. Glad to have you on. I appreciate you being willing to come on with us.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, Trey, and I like this. I like the idea that maybe we're starting to move into something a little regular here. You go on a lot of the same things that I talk about, and vice versa. And you know, it's always neat, I think, for folks sometimes to hear those different points of view, because you say things that you know that I hadn't maybe talked about, and maybe and vice versa too. So it makes for some interesting. Podcast when you hear it as a conversation. It's fun to do. I appreciate you having me.
No problem. Well, there you have it right there, guys. There's our interview with Paul McGuire from TheAffluentStudent.com. I thought that interview went exceptionally well. I think it's got good information. It gives you parents plenty of stuff to stop and chew on. I know Paul, like you said at the end, got me thinking and chewing on different things and ideas that I had never thought of. I hope it does that for you guys. Consider sharing this around Facebook as well. Get this out. Remember, a good way to help me with this at the Family Podcast Network is just take a little bit of time and I run over there and just hit share. And you can share this right over into your Facebook account and let other people be able to get a hold of that. So sure do appreciate you guys. Thanks for taking the time to sit in for this pretty lengthy this interview today, but I think it was really good. We're definitely going to have Paul back on the air again here within the next several weeks and get back on there and talk about some more stuff that you parents are wanting to listen to. If you guys have any questions or comments or thoughts, concerns that you have for either Paul or myself, please feel free to submit those to Trey Gibson at TheFamilyPodcastNetwork.com. Guys, I answer every email that I get from you guys. You will get an answer from me. But guys, this wraps it up for this episode of the Family Podcast Network. We help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. You guys have a great day. We will see you guys tomorrow.